Big show for you here today. It is our Teams That Shape the Draft series. Justin Boone joins me to break down the teams that have multiple first round picks in the 2026 NFL draft. We got the Jets, we got the Browns, we got the Dolphins in rebuilding mode. What could those teams look to add, and might they doom a first round wide receiver? Plus, Cowboys and Chiefs, they also have multiple first round picks. A little bit more interesting from an offensive standpoint with those two teams. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball. And joining me to do just that is Justin Boone. Boone, I need to get your comment on some breaking news, a scandal that has happened in the fantasy football world right as we were about to start recording here at 2 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday. The Atlanta Falcons have signed Brian Robinson, formerly of the San Francisco 49ers and the Washington Commanders, to be in the backfield with Bijan Robinson. Again, I call this a scandal, Boone, and I'm very serious about this. I call this a scandal, Boone, because this is going to be so confusing. How many just ridiculous? It's going to be. For the rankings, like B Robinson. Is it going to have to be BR Robinson, BI Robinson? I don't know how that's going to work. We can come back to that in just a second. But think of all of the disgusting, degenerate freaks in dynasty leagues, redraft leagues that are going to try to swindle, you know, their maybe inebriated league mate. You know, they're not so paying attention league mate by trading them Brian Robinson instead of Bijan Robinson, Atlanta Falcons running back B Robinson. I mean, my goodness, what a scandal to rock the fantasy world here on March 24th.
Well, we were joking before the show that this did happen once a long time ago. There was two Adrian Petersons, so that was a bit of an issue. I think there's been some others along the way, but this is a huge one. Like, this is going to be, I feel like every article I write, every time I put up my rankings, I'm going to need like a little italicized blurb at the top reminding everyone, if you get a trade offer, click on the player, make sure that you're not trading for the wrong guy here. Cause I'd like to think that fantasy managers are above this and people aren't going to try to do some shady things. But let's face it, Harmon, we know people are. They're going to try to make these deals in the coming days, throughout the season. It's going to happen nonstop, and you're going to have a lot of upset people out there. And I'm not somebody that believes in vetoes either for trades. So if that trade goes through, maybe your league will agree to flip it back, but it's on you. If you did not check which B. Robinson that was, in my mind, that is your fault. So it's just going to be an awful situation.
That's absolutely right. Listen, this is a personal accountability, personal responsibility podcast. If you get swindled by the Brian Robinson, not Bijan Robinson thing in a trade, I don't want to. Oh, we got to veto this. No. Pay attention. Lock in. Don't be making like a trade with one hand while you're, I don't know, changing the laundry or whatever with the other. You're not totally locked in. If it's trade time, you'd be focused. I think you should do it on a laptop. You shouldn't do it on a phone. I don't know about you, Boone. You're older than me, much older than me, actually. I don't know about you, but my biggest boomer trait is that I can't make any big purchase or decision on a phone. It has to be on a laptop. So I would encourage people to
sounds
adopt
like you're older
that.
Than me. I think that sounds like pretty, that's old man stuff there. I'm definitely out here making purchases on phones. I will say though, we should probably give a little bit of fantasy analysis of this one. I don't think this really moves the needle that much for Bijan Robinson. I still see him as the clear 101. I think he's going to have an awesome season. I think he's going to run away with, you know, being the best fantasy pick and the guy that you're going to want and that true like league winner. I think this is still going to be a huge season for him. I don't see Brian Robinson coming in and playing the same kind of role that like Tyler Allgeier had. I think this is still going to be Bijan Robinson's backfield, but I will say this maintains Brian Robinson's value because he's going from being Christian McCaffrey's backup, which would have been a very good spot if McCaffrey ended up getting hurt this year, but somehow he managed to take all the life force from all his teammates and stay healthy all season long. Well, if Bijan Robinson goes down, man, Brian Robinson could still get it done. He's only a couple seasons removed here from having over 1,000 yards. So this is still a good running back, a guy that could produce, not give you that much in the passing game, but could still be a decent fantasy asset if he gets a chance to start at any point this season. It's not just about the trades and the ethics of fantasy trading. There's a little bit of fantasy analysis we can make here.
Good on you for actually bringing some serious analysis to what I would say was like 60% a joke segment here by me off the top. But yeah, I think I agree with you there that he could definitely have some value if anything happens to Bijan Robinson, which hopefully it does not. Hopefully it does not. And a little bit more standalone appeal here than in San Francisco, where they gave Christian McCaffrey an absurd amount of opportunities last season. Okay, let's get to the real business of the show here today. Every Tuesday leading up to the NFL draft, Justin Boone is going to join me for our Teams That Will Shape the Draft series. Today, we are doing a deep dive on teams with multiple first round picks, which we have five teams to go over today. We have the New York Jets. We have the Cleveland Browns. We have the Miami Dolphins. And then it gets a little bit more exciting with the Dallas Cowboys and the Kansas City Chiefs here. So these teams are going to be really fun to break down. What we're going to do on these shows is do kind of a deep dive on these specific operations. We'll have themes to every single one of these teams that shape the draft series here, Boone. And it kind of gives the listeners a good refresh of what's happened so far and what might still be to come for these teams. Again, kind of very different outfits, these five teams here, especially with the first three ones being pretty much in rebuilding mode.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, and as much as I like to see this as a Bills fan with the Jets and Dolphins being on this list today, there's a lot to talk through in terms of what these teams could potentially be and some of the assets they have moving forward, including multiple first round picks, which is a pretty good way to get yourself going in a rebuild.
All right, so let's get started with the first team here, which is the New York Jets, who are picking twice in the first round. They're picking second and they're picking 16th. For every single one of these, I'm going to read off all of their offseason moves here so far, or at least the vast majority of them. So get ready as I read a lot of names here. They added Geno Smith, acquired in a trade. They franchise tagged Breece Hall. They added offensive guard Dylan Parham. They added edge players Kingsley Enagbare and Joseph Asai. Asai was on a three-year deal. Enagbare was on a one-year deal. They also added David Onyemata on a one-year deal on the defensive line, traded for Tavondre Sweat from the Tennessee Titans. They added linebacker Demario Davis on a two-year deal. Nashon Wright signed a one-year deal at cornerback. Safety Dane Belton and safety Minkah Fitzpatrick both entered the team as well. Fitzpatrick was acquired in a trade, and the team signed kicker Cade York. So they've been very busy, Boone, especially on the defensive side of the football, getting a lot of veterans in here in addition to the Geno Smith trade to sort of solidify the starting quarterback position. Right now, these are their team needs from mock draft database, so we can decide if we agree or disagree with these. Defensive back, wide receiver, linebacker, and I still think they need some edge defenders despite the Asai and Enagbare deals as well. So we could probably have a longer checklist for the New York Jets. I think there's some potential for them to add to what I do think is a young and underrated offensive line. But yeah, Jets were busy this offseason, primarily adding some defensive veterans on that side of the ball.
Yeah, and the veteran aspect, I think, means something, right? And this coaching staff, this regime, we've talked about it before. I think they have one of the hottest seats in the NFL, right? And at least in my mind, I don't know if they're going to survive this season, but they certainly went out and made a ton of moves to get some veteran help, to get some younger guys with promise as well. It wasn't all older guys, but a lot of leadership, especially on the defensive side of the ball, which I think is smart, I think was very needed. We'll see if it works out, but getting guys like, you know, Minkah Fitzpatrick, like he's 29 years old, like he's still a decent player, to get some of these guys the way they got them, which was fairly cheap, right? Like getting Geno Smith, and we've joked before that they kind of had to get Geno Smith the way that they did, because I don't know how many quarterbacks wanted to go to New York and play for them, but they got him there fairly cheap. And now they have an upgrade, I think, on what they've had in recent seasons. Certainly what they had last year with Justin Fields and Tyrod Taylor and Brady Cook, I think, got out there at one point. But yeah, this is an upgrade, I think, Geno Smith. Now, how much of an upgrade is Geno Smith for this team? That's the question. He's coming off a really bad season, but I think we could look at that situation with the Raiders and say, you know, the offense, there was a lot of problems there. We saw an offensive coordinator change midway through the year. Brock Bowers, their best weapon. He gets hurt early in the season. He misses time and isn't the same player. The offensive line, just absolutely awful there. So there's a lot of reasons, I think, why that was such a bad season for Geno Smith, and he could certainly have a bounce back in this offense. I don't know. Do you see that any differently? Do you have hope for Geno being the guy that could maybe, you know, unlock the guys that we want in this offense for fantasy, which is Breece Hall, which is Garrett Wilson, or perhaps any others like a Mason Taylor?
It's a super low bar to clear, but there's a chance that Geno Smith this year could be the best quarterback that Garrett Wilson's ever had in his NFL career. Again, super low
bar.
I know he
played
with Aaron.
That, right?
We've said that. I remember
this time it's going to be. I remember doing that with him. Oh, it's Aaron Rodgers. Like, yeah, over and over.
I remember doing that with Allen Robinson with the Bears.
Well, that's one of the things I'm worried about. I was going to say is I'm worried that, like, we're going to get fooled again, that we're seeing these additions. And really, if like any other team, if a smarter team in the league, a team that, you know, had more clout, more respectability, made the moves that the Jets made this offseason, I think we would look at it and we go, there's a lot of smart moves here. There's a lot of like cheaper veterans that they got, a lot of interesting, you know, younger players who they got maybe cheaper deals that could turn into something more. But because it's the Jets, I want to keep like reminding myself, like, is this going to work out though? Like, kind of like, don't be fooled again. Right.
Right. And I mean, that's the thing. Like, this, what's so hard to figure out about the Jets right now is because, yeah, like if a different team added DeMario Davis on a 2-year contract, be like, you know what? I think Davis still has some years left on him. You know, is like a finishing piece to a contending defense. I think he could really offer them something. But like, yeah, then he's playing on this Jets team that, you know, we kind of think is going nowhere. And they traded a bunch of their players for assets last year during the NFL season. They have like first round picks on first round picks on first round picks. And OK, well, you think that's a team that's reloading, but it's just a reminder that like Aaron Glenn and probably general manager Darren Mooji, they don't have time to be thinking about tanking. They don't have time to be thinking about, ooh, what are we going to get in the 2027 NFL draft? Like, if they're picking first overall in the 2027 NFL draft, like, Aaron Glenn's not making that pick. So he's trying to get his defense from what was an outright embarrassment last year to just at least like, hey, this is acceptable on an NFL football field, which is what some of these veterans are. But, and I think Geno Smith is kind of in the same bucket there at quarterback as well, that there's almost no chance that he'll be as good as he was in Seattle, which I have seen people like try to retcon the Geno Smith era in Seattle. It's like, well, he's gone, then they immediately win the Super Bowl. Okay, Geno was a certifiable, even if he was a little bit overrated by certain segments of kind of like NFL Twitter, whatever, he was a verifiable above average starting quarterback, if not like pushing the 12th best quarterback in the league type status at certain points during his tenure in Seattle. He's probably not going to be that guy for the Jets. But again, can he be better than like the 2024 version of Aaron Rodgers, which was not that good? Or could he be kind of just better than the 2025 version of Geno Smith, which was one of the worst starting quarterbacks in the league? And that might, again, be like, I don't know, 17th best. Could he be like the 17th or 18th best quarterback in the NFL? Like, do you see that pathway for him? I come back to the Frank Reich of it all, and just that is where I get the most hung up.
Yeah, like, and I don't want to just keep throwing cold water on the Jets here, because it would be exciting for them to get going. And like I said, there's a lot of pieces in this offense that are still young guys who could get it going for fantasy. And we've talked about it before that, you know, Breece Hall, Garrett Wilson, kind of in a similar boat right now, where if they were in a better situation, I think we'd be looking at them as top 10, top 12 fantasy assets at their position, and yet we're bumping them down. I still have them inside the top 20, but to me, they're more like mid to low end, you know, RB2, wide receiver two types because of this situation. Is Geno Smith the guy? I just mean, like, he's going to turn 36 during the season, Harmon. Like, do you really go out and normally get a guy who's coming off a bad year, who's turning 36? Is he the guy that's actually going to save your franchise and bump these guys up and get them to where we want them to be?
Is he actually
going to
even start the whole season? Like, that's another thing. Are they a team that takes...
Is this thing going to go off the rails? Yeah, like, does this coaching staff, does this regime... Does the hot seat get to them eventually at some point in the season? And then what happens? Like, I would say last year, I know Garrett Wilson got hurt, but there was a lot of like bad feelings around him. Like, he did not seem to be happy with the way things were going there. And I don't want to suggest that, like, he acted like, you know, they took the injury and used that as a way to get out or anything like that. But no, he certainly before the injury was unhappy with the way things were going. There was some sideline outbursts and stuff like that. And that's what happens on teams that aren't winning, that haven't had success in a long time. Do you worry, like, is that going to happen again this year? I definitely think that's a problem.
Yeah, Brees Hall obviously was upset to have not been traded at the deadline, was like live tweeting that during the NFL trade deadline in November. He was tagged and then was talking about, man, we sure seem to have a lot of cap space as we're throwing a lot of money around this year. So yeah, it's just tough with the Jets. And my biggest question too, from like a fantasy standpoint, Boone, is actually, are we ever going to get an ADP discount on Brees Hall and Garrett Wilson too? Because like Garrett Wilson at times last year was very like good from a fantasy, or not good, but he was totally fine from a fantasy standpoint and was even producing kind of above what you might have imagined with Justin Fields at the quarterback, because I think Tanner Engstrand had constructed a pretty good passing game and was weaponizing Garrett Wilson in some interesting ways as kind of on in-breaking routes and stuff like that. But him being, again, miraculously overperforming in that environment, he was basically like meeting ADP expectations as he was playing. There's like, and that felt like a miracle to him, to being like the 15th to 18th best receiver in fantasy, which is kind of where he goes off the board every year. This year, because the Jets are just so the Jets, and like people probably aren't going to be inspired by the Geno thing, might we actually get a discount this year? Because if we don't, I'm going to be hard pressed to like get all that jazzed up about taking either of these guys this year.
I don't think we're going to, and it's not going to be the same as it's been in past years where those guys were getting steamed up a little bit, but I still don't think they're going to fall far enough, because they are still sexier names for fantasy. They're guys that we've seen do it for stretches, if not for like, you know, whole seasons when they were producing as, you know, top 10 type guys. But they've done it before in fantasy, help people win games. I just don't think we're going to get it. So then you look at the offense and you say, okay, is there anywhere where you could invest a little bit cheaper maybe? And if things go well, could you get something out of that? And you know, I brought up their tight end, Mason Taylor. Like, he's going to go into his second season here. Last year, like, it wasn't great the whole season, but there were certainly moments, Harmon. Like, he finished as a top 15 fantasy tight end 4 times in his last 10 games. Also drew some big target totals at times last year, doing that as a rookie in a bad situation. I know there were injuries around him, which kind of helped a little bit with the target totals in some of those games, but could he be a guy that steps up? We're always looking for, you know, tight ends that could be the number two option in an offense. Could he potentially be the number two pass catcher in this offense and become something for fantasy? And that really leads to my guy, A.D. Mitchell. Like, is there any reason to hold on to hope here, Harmon? Like, I still want to see this guy produce. I feel like he's 70-75% of what like a good NFL receiver is. But the 20, 25, 30%, the rest of it, it's so bad that it just drags him down completely. And last year, again, when he got traded there, there was some hope that Garrett Wilson out for the second half of the season. Now this is going to be his shot. He's going to get volume. He's going to get a chance to show what he can do. And there were a couple games where he did, but he couldn't keep that going. It wasn't consistent by any means. And it wasn't even like consistent enough, because receivers don't have to produce week in, week out. But it wasn't even happening often enough where you could put him confidently in your lineup. Now we're going to have Garrett Wilson back healthy. Like we said, Brees Hall back. Taylor's there and could get some targets at tight end. I worry about Mitchell on top of the fact that it's not impossible that they draft a receiver.
That was where I was going to go, is that there's a chance that, not second overall, but as we're talking about these first two first round picks, 16th overall, could they end up adding a first round receiver? And then it's just like, we're really squeezed here for targets. Cause I mean, Mitchell had some moments at the end of last year. He had a couple of big games, and we got to remember, like, everything is adjusted for the fact that they were playing Brady Cook last year. Like, no disrespect to Brady Cook, but I did not see that guy as an NFL starter at any point, or even like an interesting NFL backup. So any of like the production results here for a guy like Adonai Mitchell, that is a pretty huge asterisk there. Even if there were obviously times where Mitchell made his own problems, that's going to happen for him. But I think if they don't draft a receiver at the 16th pick, I think it's very likely that Adonai Mitchell still has some appeal, you know, obviously, again, with the asterisks and everything as the Jets here. So if we go into this and there's not a big addition at the wide receiver position at the 16th overall pick, I can get behind Adonai Mitchell as like a deeper sleeper in a Geno Smith-led offense. It sounds disgusting to say, but I mean, a guy that can push downfield. He wins in tight coverage. Geno Smith wants to take, well, sort of, sometimes he wins in tight coverage. Theoretically, he wins in tight coverage. Geno Smith wants to take those shots. I do think there's some reason to hope for your guy, Adonai Mitchell.
All right. I'll keep holding him. I won't trade him away on all my dynasty teams, but I don't know if I'll be looking at him in redraft. You don't want to do the cliche, like better in best ball, but maybe like that late round best ball pick that you could just throw him and hope he has a few of those big flash weeks that get into your lineup.
All right, let's get to the next team here. Another team that's picking close to the top of the NFL draft. That is the Cleveland Browns, who have the 6th and 24th overall picks in the first round this year. This is a recap of their offensive moves so far. They added tight end Jack Stoll on a one-year deal. They also made a bunch of moves on the offensive line. They brought in offensive tackle or guard Titus Howard. I believe they said he is going to play tackle for this team. He was acquired in a trade with the Houston Texans. They also brought back Tevin Jenkins. Last year, he played some guard for them, as was more of a depth piece. Guard Zion Johnson from the LA Chargers signed a 3-year deal. Elgton Jenkins, who's played across the offensive line, he signed a 2-year deal with this team, formerly the Green Bay Packers. They signed defensive end AJ Epinesa to a 1-year deal, Kalia Davis to a 1-year deal, Quincy Williams signed a 2-year deal, and they brought in safety Daniel Thomas. So the theme of what the Browns have done so far, Boone, is offensive line, because they needed to. All of their 5 starters were eligible for free agency this year. It looks like right now, potentially, they could have 4 of the 5 spots filled with some combination of Howard, Jenkins, Johnson, and Jenkins again, Elgton Jenkins. So 4 of the 5 spots there. It could potentially be filled, but that left tackle spot is obviously one to keep your eye on. So team needs right now, in addition to just, again, left tackle, offensive line generally, they have a huge wide receiver need. They have a cornerback need and an edge rusher need as well. So I think from a fantasy standpoint, a lot of open-ended players here, but also some intrigue for some of the guys they drafted last year.
Yeah, and they've done a better job. You mentioned it already, kind of salvaging that offensive line, because going into the offseason, that looked like that was going to be a huge problem for them. So the fact that they've at least seems to like they've solidified some of that line, that gives me a little more hope for a guy like Quinshon Judkins. And Judkins last year, like, he came onto the scene, was fantastic, right? But if that offensive line was going to go in the direction it seemed like it was going at the beginning of the offseason, that would have bumped him way down our fantasy boards and our fantasy rankings. Maybe not so much now, right? Maybe he can be the one piece here that you feel really excited about. I mean, Harold Fannin, we're going to talk about him in a second. I think his outlook is really dependent on what they do at receiver in this draft. But for Judkins, as long as this offensive line can hold up and give him something to run behind, he had a really strong rookie year, right? Like 998 scrimmage yards, 7 touchdowns. That was just in 14 appearances. It was the RB22 in fantasy points per game, 11.2 fantasy points per game, despite dealing with the injuries, dealing with a general like subpar offense around him, lacked quality quarterback play all year long. And of course, that's another talking point that we'll have to discuss, though, for fantasy. I don't know how much that's really going to move the needle with what they have at quarterback right now. But if you isolate the 5 games before he suffered his first injury, Judkins was playing at a really high level. RB14 over that stretch, 14.6 fantasy points per game. I think this is a guy that could be a meaningful fantasy player, but again, we kind of need like this overall environment to improve around him. And how much can they do in the draft? How much can they kind of move that ball forward? That'll be interesting to see here, because there are a couple players, despite kind of how down the public perception is on the Browns, there are a couple guys in this offense that we'd like to see in our lineups and we'd like to see take their games to the next level.
Yeah, people will be in on Judkins and Fannin in fantasy this year based on what they did last year. So then it's just, again, what is around these guys? You mentioned they could take a wide receiver. Carnell Tate, sixth overall, I think it's pretty live for them to keep him in Ohio, potentially just get a starting perimeter option, which would allow them to kind of move around Jerry Jeudy, do some of the stuff that I think you have to do to roll cater to him. And just the guys beyond him, like Tillman has not been able to string together consistent success. He hasn't been able to stay healthy. Isaiah Bond, I don't think, is a guy that you want as anything more than an interesting three. So wide receiver is a huge need for them. The thing that is tough, Boone, is that unlike the last team that we talked about with the Jets, where like I don't know if I'm trying to find new and creative ways to invest in the Frank Reich offense. I know we have a huge quarterback question here with, are they actually going to give Deshaun Watson another shot? Is it Shedeur Sanders for a full season? Will they take a, you know, mid-round rookie again? I like Todd Monken as a play caller, and I think what they could put together potentially with the run game here and building the play action pass game off of it, I can tell myself a story where this is interesting. But it just comes back to quarterback. And again, do I want to find new and creative ways to invest in the Shedeur Sanders offense? I at least am more sold on the play caller than I am for what the other team we talked about earlier.
And we should mention, too, that even though we're talking about teams with multiple first round picks, it's, you know, when do they have their other picks? And went over the Jets. The Jets have four picks in the top 50, right? That's a lot of firepower. The Browns, four picks in the top 70. Like, they're going to be able to address some of this stuff. And I know they do have some holes on the defense, but the defense hasn't been the problem for this team. Like, the defense has managed. The defense has been even good at times, and they need to invest in offense. And that's why I'm a little bit worried about Harold Fannin. And it's something that I kind of looked into more when we were going to talk about this, because at the start of the offseason, you saw what he did last year. It's a fantastic player, guy that can move around the formation, just so exciting. And yet, last year, he led this team in, like, basically every receiving category. So that was with that group that you mentioned. If they go out and spend a high pick, which they have a bunch of them, if they go and spend a high pick on receiver, and I agree, I think getting a receiver in the top 10 is certainly possible for them. What does that do for Harold Fannin? It's going to bump him down. It's going to make his outlook not nearly as exciting in this offense, especially with the quarterback situation the way it is. So that's what I'm concerned about. Harold Fannin Jr. was somebody that I was drafting heavily, that I wanted on my teams, that I'm targeting. And yet now I've just taken a slight step back here because I am worried that they're going to address receiver, and that's going to complicate things for him having a lot more target competition in an offense where, like you said, we don't really necessarily even trust what they're going to have at quarterback.
Yeah, definitely a non-0% chance we come out of the 2026 NFL draft and it's a little bit of a quagmire in terms of what the Browns have at pass catcher, because they do still have Jeudy. He's still on a big contract. And Harold Fannin is a specific type of tight end. Like, I wouldn't even rule out they take an inline tight end at some point in the NFL draft, because, you know, Fannin is more of that detached formation option. So again, could be a little bit of a quagmire in the Browns pass catching department for a team that we have no idea what the passing game is even going to look like, thanks to the quarterback situation there. Okay, we are going to take our first quick break. When we come back, more teams that have multiple first-round picks. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. We're continuing to talk through teams that will shape the draft, teams that have multiple first-round picks. That certainly includes the Miami Dolphins. After trading away Jalen Waddle, they now own the 11th and the 30th overall pick in this year's NFL draft. Here's a recap of some of their offseason additions so far. They signed quarterback Malik Willis to a three-year deal. They signed wide receiver Tutu Atwell and Jalen Tolbert, both to one-year deals. Tight end Greg Dulcich was also brought back on yet again another one-year deal. There's going to be a theme here to what the Dolphins did in terms of how long they're committing to some of these players outside of Malik Willis. Ben Sims, another tight end, one-year deal. Charlie Heck, one-year deal. Jamari Sawyer, one-year deal, I believe. David Ajabo signed a deal with this team. Edge rusher Josh Uche also signed a one-year deal. Cornerback Marco Wilson, safety Zane Anderson, defensive back Lonnie Johnson, kicker Zane Gonzalez, and punter Bradley Pinion. A lot of low-level commitments outside of the big fish, which was Malik Willis. This leaves their team needs, again, according to Mock Draft Database here, defensive back, wide receiver, offensive tackle, edge rusher. And if we could be honest, Boone, say almost anything here. We could say almost anything for this particular need situation. So a little bit of a blank slate here for the Miami Dolphins after trading away Jalen Waddle in the wide receiver room, but they did bring in Malik Willis. Where are we at with this operation? Which is pretty clearly signaling they're thinking about the future.
I mean, I almost just want to say TBD for the Dolphins and like move on to the next team, right? Because there's so much up in the air here. The depth chart, as you went over there, it looks rough. And if people look at these, yeah, there we go. Like it gets even worse after that. But also, this is a team, and I mentioned with the previous two, right? This is a team with so much firepower. Two firsts, a second, four thirds, seven picks in the top 100. They are going to start moving in the right direction in this draft if they can hit on some of these. And 11 picks total in the draft, new regime taking over. I mean, you hope that things get off on the right foot with this rebuild. But man, I look at Malik Willis and I say, it's going to be a different story after the draft. We'll see what they do. But right now you look at him and he has barely anyone to throw to. And yet at the same time for fantasy, like, does it matter that much for his fantasy value? Because we're really just hanging our hat on the rushing ability and whether he's going to be able to continue the way he's produced on the ground in the past. You know, you look at some of those starts that he had with the Packers, 41 rushing yards, 60 rushing yards, 73. He was averaging basically a rushing touchdown per game during those three starts that he had for the Packers over the last 2 years. Not surprising at all that he finished as a top seven fantasy quarterback in two of those three starts. And they had better weapons for sure. But really with Willis, it's not the passing game that we expect him to put up the big fantasy numbers in. It's that we need him to run the ball. And the way that they've constructed this, I think they expect that he's going to be running the ball a lot as well. But again, we're going to have to see what they do in the draft and how they're kind of approaching this offense. I think they're going to be spending some picks at receiver, maybe even at tight end. They're going to bring in some playmakers. They have to. They have no other choice.
Yeah, one of these first round picks feels like it could be a wideout. There's no doubt. I mean, like, this wide receiver room is just it's so crazy to look at on paper. We've talked about it. Obviously, they're going to be adding somebody here. I'm not sure that player will come out as one of the bigger winners in fantasy necessarily. We've talked about some of the overall volume like, man, we're talking about a lot of these teams like Jets first round receiver, Browns first round receiver, Dolphins first round wide receiver. This could get pretty depressing after night.
Yeah,
it could be
after day one. Like that might be the storyline that because I think we're generally excited about most of the guys that we expect to go in the first round among the receivers. At least I am. And yet we could see a lot of these guys end up in landing spots that makes them a lot less exciting in year one and maybe a lot less exciting in dynasty, depending how long it takes some of these teams to get going.
Totally. And just putting together like my early rankings for this class, like, I think there's a lot of really good players. I think there's a lot of guys that are worth first round picks or should be considered in kind of the back half of the first round, that whole deal. But I do just worry with this class overall, not just receivers, just like the entire NFL draft class, like having a lack of, you know, blue chip players, lack of premium position talent at the top of the draft. That's something that, you know, every big draft analyst has talked about so far. I do think there's a chance that these receivers are going to get pushed up the board because like everybody needs some level of a receiver, and even great offenses like the Rams have thought about like taking, they've been kind of rumored to be sniffing around wide receiver because Davante Adams is on the last year of his deal. They don't have a ton of depth behind those guys, just adding one more finishing piece to the offense. But then, yeah, you look at these teams like the Browns, the Jets, and the Dolphins, where there's not a quarterback answer. We'll see. Malik Willis could be a quarterback answer. That's also just something to remember as we talk about Malik Willis. Like, yeah, he's going to be good in fantasy because he can run, but there's no like proof of concept of what Malik Willis is going to be as a starting quarterback. And I wouldn't say he's necessarily on paper set up to thrive right now. And adding like a rookie receiver in the Carnell Tate or Mekhi Lemon tier, I think those guys are good, but they're not necessarily like Malik Nabers where they're ready to be 170 type target players or whatever he was pacing at in his first season. They're not necessarily ready to be like of that tier early on in the NFL, at least from what I've seen so far. You know, obviously the NFL draft is always a little bit of a crapshoot. So we could definitely be leaving the first round of the fantasy or first round of the NFL draft just being like, man, we got some rough landing spots for these wideouts who already were kind of like good players, but not great prospects.
I will also say, because I don't think you'll say it yourself, but we know the excellent work that you do at Reception Perception. This week, you've started dropping the charts and your write-ups for a bunch of the early receivers. So we're talking about them a lot here. If people haven't checked that out, definitely go check that out, because we know whenever Harmon says anything about receivers, whether they're in the NFL, whether they're prospects, you always have to make sure you're checking out that content, and you do a great job with that, buddy. So figured give you a little plug there.
Well, thank you. It at least saves from the doom and gloom of thinking about, like, yeah, all these players that I wrote up that I am really excited about playing for some of these teams here, because that is definitely possible. But elsewhere, for the Dolphins, like, I guess our only other real fantasy question, other than just, you know, the wide receivers and which rookies will it be and how does that factor in with the volume of the offense, is on a team that's sort of changing over offensive systems. Bobby Slowick was there last year. I imagine you're going to want to keep a lot in place. You and I have kind of had, like, the Devon Achane conversation. Do things change a ton for him? Where do you think he's going to kind of factor in this offense overall?
Yeah, we won't really know until we see what they do at receiver in the draft, and even at tight end in the draft, because I bring up Greg Dulcich as one of those, like, deep dynasty stashes, but man, I don't know that you want to go into the season with Greg Dulcich as your number one tight end.
Yeah.
So right now on paper, like, when I'm doing the projections, it's like impossible not to give Achane, like, all the work, and it puts him right back to where he was last year. And yet in my head, I'm trying to have the foresight to be like, okay, there are going to be better receivers. It's not going to just be Jalen Tolbert and Tutu Atwell and these guys. They're going to have some bigger names there who are going to be able to take a little bit more of the target share, which is going to come away from Achane. But it's impossible not to think that he's going to be hurt, one, by the fact that this offense is going to take a step back and that Mike McDaniel's not there. And also, and I guess the two is not there just, like, taking these easy dump offs to him, but that the volume might just come down here overall in this passing attack with Malik Willis. Because you look at Achane, like, he's really boosted his fantasy production, right? 78 receptions, 592 yards, and 6 touchdowns through the air in 2024. Then last year, 67 catches, 488 yards, and 4 touchdowns. That is huge receiving production for a running back, and if he's not getting that, it just pushes him out of that range where he could potentially compete for, you know, a spot in the top three among running backs for fantasy, where now he might fall a bit down into the mid to low end running back one range. I think right now I have him at running back 8, which I'm not sure where everyone else has him, but I feel like that's probably a little lower, because I pushed guys like Ashton Jeanty above him. I pushed Omarion Hampton above him, guys who I just really like their situations. I like the talent, and they're younger guys who I think are going to step up and, you know, really have bigger years this year than what we saw from them last season, where Achane, it's kind of setting up to not be the case unless, and we brought this up when we talked about the Jalen Waddle trade, unless he ends up getting traded to a better situation.
Denzel Boston, 30th overall pick for the Miami Dolphins. That would be acceptable from a wide receiver standpoint. Big body, go over the middle of the field, do some of the blocking stuff. I could settle with that, as I've tried to not doom some of these receivers to tough landing spots. I think I could settle with that one here. Let's go to the next team here that has 2 first-round picks. That is the Dallas Cowboys. 12th overall pick and the 20th overall pick for Dallas. Here's a recap of some of their offensive moves, or offseason moves so far. Quarterback Sam Howell signed a 1-year deal. They re-signed Javonte Williams on a 3-year deal. George Pickens received the franchise tag. They added center Matt Hennessy. Edge rusher Rashawn Gary was acquired in a trade. Adingbo, I don't know that name. No, I messed that one up. Kobe Durant signed a free agent deal. PJ Lock, safety, 1-year deal. Safety Jalen Thompson signed a 3-year deal. And Brandon Aubrey received a second round tender. Team needs defense. Okay. Just all their team needs are on defense, according to Mock Draft Database. Cornerback, edge rusher, linebacker, safety. So from a fantasy standpoint, Boone, we know this was one of the worst defenses in the NFL, especially at the beginning of last season, which got this team into a bunch of shootout situations, which allowed the offense to shine. I think right now they're certainly changing the scheme. You know, they've definitely made some interesting additions on that side of the ball. I wouldn't say the work is done there, and you imagine a lot of that work is going to be done in the NFL draft here, with this, especially those 2 first-round picks.
Yeah, and it really has to be. Like, they should have just every site focused on defense the rest of the offseason here, right? Yeah, Gary, Thompson, like, those are great additions, but they got so much more work to do, and you're returning, like, your full offense, right? And we don't exactly mm-hmm. know how the George Pickens thing is going to play out, if they're going to keep him long-term, if they're going to get him on a deal or not, but right now it looks like he's going to play on the franchise tag, and we could talk more about what that means for George Pickens in a second, but they have to just spend every asset on the defense. And I know producer Colin, our resident Cowboys fan, you know, we should have him on for the segment, really. He chimes in about the Cowboys enough when we're off air. We should really just have him on screen when we're having these conversations about the Cowboys. But I know he mentioned that there's some talk out there that maybe the Cowboys could go out and get a receiver with their second first round pick. It's possible. I mean, it's not crazy when you see the value and the contracts that receivers are getting now.
Right.
And with the situation with Pickens, it would potentially maybe make sense to spend, a first round pick when you have two. But that's not how I would play it. I think I would just be investing in this defense, trying to get this team as ready to contend for a title as possible, especially given Jerry Jones' age and everything. He talks about how they're going to go all in and try to win a Super Bowl here while he's still around. Well, the way to do that, in my mind, isn't by going getting a receiver when you have two of the best in the league already in your offense. I think you just need to spend all this draft capital on improving that defense and see if you can get it going in the right direction here as quick as possible.
Yeah, and I like Ryan Flannoy as a kind of deeper name there. You know, that being said, you're right to point out the contract value of wide receiver. And Jaxon Smith-Njigba signs a deal that pushes him over $40 million a year. You know that George Pickens and his agent are going to be looking at that. I don't know if he quite has the full resume to say, hey, I can be the highest paid receiver in the NFL. But guess what? If he didn't receive the franchise tag and he got to the open market, he might end up becoming the highest paid receiver in the NFL, because that's how markets and timing and leverage works. And George Pickens is coming off a fantastic season. So that deal is definitely going to be something that I think could hit. And Seattle goes and just gets that deal done with JSN early. We know that's not how Dallas operates. They want to keep themselves in the headline. They want to kick that can down the road. I just don't know how that's going to sit necessarily with George Pickens. And then if he gets a monster contract extension, you've got CeeDee Lamb on a monster contract extension. It can just get pretty tight there pretty quickly. And you've seen how the Bengals have had to live with that, where it's like, oh, we've got to hit our draft picks on defense. They haven't hit their draft picks on defense. The defense stinks out loud every single year. Dallas does not want to find themselves in that situation here necessarily. So it could be a conversation point to is Dallas a sleeper team to take a wide receiver? They don't have a pick in the second round, but they do have a pick in the third round after trading Osa Odighizuwa to the San Francisco 49ers. They pick at 92nd overall. To me, Boone, that might make more sense. Like, take a receiver there to hedge your bets against George Pickens leaving after 2026.
And for anyone who's not watching on YouTube, we just had the tweet up there that Omar Cooper Jr. was there on a top 30 visit. So either that's a smokescreen, which we know there's a lot of those this time of year, or perhaps that is a sign that they are considering receiver, a little bit later in the first round there. But it's interesting because, like, from a fantasy perspective, the other teams we've talked about so far, there's kind of a lot up in the air. There's a lot of negativity. The Cowboys, fantasy-wise, it feels like it's already set, right? Like, Dak is a solid QB1. CeeDee Lamb, a high-end wide receiver one for fantasy. Pickens, if he sticks around, if he stays happy, he's flirting with low-end wide receiver one numbers. At worst, he's a high-end wide receiver two. I'm not a big Jake Ferguson guy, but we did see last year when there's an injury to one of the receivers that Ferguson can step up. He can take on volume, and he becomes a fantasy starter in that situation. I feel like one of the real winners of the offseason and a guy that I've moved up in my rankings is Javonte Williams. Going back there, getting a deal, after having the season that he had last year, going back to that same environment, not having to see him go to another situation where now we kind of have to reassess how is he going to fit in that offense. We know we're putting him right back into this offense with all the pieces there. He can produce as long as he can stay healthy. And last year, RB13 fantasy points per game. Like, it was just an outstanding season from him. And regardless of what people think about, Jaden Blue and Phil Moffitt, as much as we talk about those guys as like stashes potentially, there's not a lot of touch competition in that backfield for Javonte Williams. We'll see if they can get through the draft without adding anybody else. But right now, it looks like he is going to have a big workload. And wouldn't surprise me at all if this guy is inside the top 10 running backs this year, just based on how that offense looks and the kind of volume that he should command.
Not sure who you're referring to. Jaden Blue, never heard of that name before in my life. But in terms of Javonte Williams, are you worried at all that like we got the perfect season out of Javonte last year and like we're just not going to get that? Or is that just like kind of stupid, random? He signs a 3-year deal, he gets the extension, and like then he takes a step back to more Denver form. Is there any wisdom behind that, or is that just like nonsense?
Well, I think one of the problems in Denver, and I don't have all the stats in front of me, but it was even a problem for him in college, was he was always splitting. He was never getting like that full volume.
Right.
And the concern, and I mean, there were injuries along the way as well that we can factor in, but I had it broken down at one point that when he was in Denver, even when he was healthy, they always had other backs involved. It seemed like the Cowboys were fine with just letting him prove that he could be the guy. And I think now we're seeing that he is healthy. And he showed last year that he could do it. So, yes, an injury could always happen to him. But in terms of like the actual talent and his situation, no, I feel pretty confident about him. He's still fairly young as well. Like, we're not talking about a guy that's like a really old back flirting with 30 or something like that. Like, he still has a good career ahead of him. So very, very excited about him. I will say, and this is stupid, you're going to laugh, but one deep dynasty stash that I will bring up with the Cowboys, and I will make it quick, don't worry. Keep an eye on the backup quarterback competition there, because they went out, they got Sam Howell, they have Joe Milton there, they're going to fight for the backup job. I'm not saying that I love either one of those guys, but in Superflex, in Dynasty, I've talked before about the value of backup quarterbacks, and if the starter goes down, how boom, they're immediately into the starting role, and they can have some value as a trade piece or potentially getting in your lineup. When you have an offense like this with such great weapons and talent around Dak, I just think that's worth noting that we'll want to watch, maybe stash these guys, and let's watch to see who wins that job, because I think it could be a valuable piece to have on your bench.
I want to see zero regular season snaps of Joe Milton or Sam Howell. Okay. Let me just
agreed. We agree there.
Let me just be on the record as saying that. But yeah, I think this Cowboys team, like, because things feel so settled on paper with the offensive depth chart, that's where I wanted to ask a Javonte question. I think the same thing with George Pickens, like, how does he play on the franchise tag, the whole deal? Those are kind of the questions, like, on the margin, maybe like weird. You can't quite get your hands, like, nothing tangible to say about this team, because it does feel very settled on the offensive depth chart. And we'll see if Dallas agrees or if they do want to spend one of these premium picks at wide receiver to sort of look to the future as George Pickens plays on that tag. We're going to take our final break of the show. When we come back, the Kansas City Chiefs have 2 first round picks. We will get into that team right after this. All right, we're back here, and it is time to talk about the team that potentially is the most exciting of the group here that has 2 first-round picks, and that is the Kansas City Chiefs, who are picking higher than usual at their own pick, the 9th overall selection. They also have the 29th overall selection from the LA Rams, thanks to the Trent McDuffie trade. Here is a recap of some of their offensive moves so far. They traded for quarterback Justin Fields from the New York Jets. They signed running back Amari DeMercado and Kenneth Walker, one of those a little bit bigger than the other in terms of the size of the contract, 3-year deal for Kenneth Walker. Wide receiver Tyquan Thornton was re-signed on a 2-year deal. Travis Kelce was re-signed on a fake news 3-year deal. That's really a 1-year deal. Come on, it's nice that they allowed him to put that deal out there, whatever. Maybe they're giving him some more money for his wedding. I don't know, but it's a fake news 3-year deal. Defensive lineman Kaius Tonga was signed to a 3-year deal. Linebacker Jack Cochrane was signed for the team. Kader Kohou signed, a really interesting player there, missed all of last season, but cornerback Kader Kohou is signed to a free agent deal. And then Alohi Gilman signed a 3-year deal as the safety for this team as well. They shed a lot of talent in the defensive backfield, Boone. They shed a lot of talent at the linebacker spot with Leo Chanel moving to Washington. And of course, that leads us to their team needs here. Cornerback, obviously a team need after losing 2 corners to the LA Rams, 1 via trade, 1 via free agency. They still need another edge rusher across from George Karlaftis. And for our purposes, wide receiver and I would say right tackle after the release, there is a pretty big need for this team. So where do your eyes go with this Chiefs team and their 2 first-round picks?
Well, not that the odds makers always have it figured out, but if you're looking at the odds right now, they're expected to go offensive line or defensive line edge with the first of their two picks. Wide receiver, though, is a close third there. And this is another team that has a lot of firepower early, three picks in the top 40, which is normally unlike them, right? They don't normally have this much capital early on in drafts. So I could see them easily adding a receiver. And that also goes back to the Rashee Rice conversation, which, you know, is not a fun one to have. We always encourage people to go check out Drew Davenport, who does an outstanding job at Football Guys and with his show, The Auction Brief. Does a great job breaking down all the legal situations that have, you know, a sort of fantasy relevance, and comes at them, you know, with the thoughtfulness that I think a lot of these situations need, because let's face it, a lot of fantasy managers and a lot of fantasy analysts, I think, sometimes look at this stuff and see names on paper and don't think about the human aspect with some of this stuff. Drew does a great job breaking that stuff down. So definitely go give him a follow, check out his work. But basically, one of the things that Drew said was that he questioned whether we would see Rice get any punishment this year from the league, like the exempt list or a suspension. He didn't think at this point that necessarily looked like it was going to be the case for Rice. And also, I mean, think of how many situations like this have happened, Harmon, where there's been a player with off-field issues in the offseason. People see the headlines, and then by the time the season rolls around, you know, the player ends up playing, and, you know, every case needs to be looked at individually. But for his situation here, I think we're looking at a player who probably will be available this season, but just has a mounting list of these off-field things, which I think would make the Chiefs a little more interested in going out and getting a receiver, another guy to add to that group. Because also, Xavier Worthy, even though they took him fairly early, hasn't done that much since he got to the NFL, right? So I think adding another piece to that receiving core makes a lot of sense.
I think in addition to the fact that, whether he's available this year or not, like, there's just been too much off the field with Rashee Rice. If I'm Kansas City, there's a 0% chance I'd be giving that guy a second contract. Just right now with what we've seen so far, that's where I'd be at it. And I think they should be looking at wide receiver. And even beyond that, like, I think he's one of the biggest sells in Dynasty, period, flat out. I mean, you probably have to have a league mate who doesn't have an internet connection and doesn't, like, see some of the off-field stories for Rashee Rice and everything to maybe get whatever would be reasonable value based on his, like, points per game and stuff like that. But this is the thing with Rashee Rice. Like, yeah, his production is great. He is efficient on a per-route basis, all that. But, like, where he struggles as a player, it's part of why Kansas City struggles as an offense, because they can't beat man coverage and they can't throw the football down the field consistently. It's like, well, Rashee Rice doesn't win downfield and he doesn't beat man coverage, but at least he's productive while the offense flounders last year, even before Patrick Mahomes got hurt. So to me, it's just like they need a different type of threat on this team. Xavier Worthy's not that guy because he needs that role catering to be successful as well. Now, there are receivers in this year's draft who could potentially fill that need for them. Like Carnell Tate, 9th overall, if he was there, I'd turn in the pick if I'm Kansas City. Like, Carnell Tate isn't necessarily a guy that would go top 10 in every single NFL draft. I don't think he's in that, like, Malik Nabers tier, that Garrett Wilson tier, Drake London, Chris Olave, obviously Marvin Harrison, Rome Odunze, these guys that would go in the top 10. He's not quite in that grouping to me. But I think he's pretty close with, like, a Tetero McMillan prospect. And he went in the top 10 last year to a team that really needed, an outside on-ball receiver. And I think, again, he could come in and be that guy for Kansas City. But again, do the Chiefs see it that way? They've viewed their receiver room in a very different light than how I viewed it, certainly. They've kind of gone for these smaller, faster players. That's the scheme that they like. Those players fit there. We'll see. But even if they get into day two, there are potentially some options there as well. As you mentioned, they have another pick high in the second round.
Yeah, and the one thing that's kind of looming over the Chiefs that I don't even think there's been enough talk about is Patrick Mahomes' health. And I think when they went out and got Justin Fields, that maybe had some people, like, raise an eyebrow about, okay, could we see Fields start the season? You know, is that going to be the case? Is that why they went out and got a player like him? I think it was just a way to get, a more quality backup onto their roster because there's some uncertainty around Mahomes potentially playing starting the year. But I wonder this season how that's going to impact this offense, because Mahomes for fantasy, it's certainly going to impact him, right? Because he was having that incredible bounce back year, but a lot of it last season was because the rushing ability and the numbers that he was putting up on the ground. Well, he's coming off of an ACL tear that happened late in the season. Guys coming off an ACL tear like that, they're not going to run as much. So when will we see Mahomes? How much is that going to impact things? And then when he does get back, is he the same player with the same kind of mobility, making those, you know, kind of trick plays where he escapes the pocket and buys time? Is he going to have that in his bag? I think this offense could look a little different. Maybe that's why they went out and got Kenneth Walker, knowing that they're going to have to lean on him a little more.
I think they definitely realize they need more of a true under center run game, which is why they not only add Kenneth Walker, but also add Amari DiMercato, who's more of that like pass protection, late down and distance back, whereas that's not really where they want Kenneth Walker on the field. I think that was a big sign there. But you're right to point that out, that a lot of the reasons Mahomes was successful as a fantasy quarterback last year was the scrambling. And a lot of that was because guys weren't getting open. You know, offensive line had some issues. The line on paper does look good, but Jalen Moore's in the last year of his deal. That's why they could be a potential right tackle team at some point in the first round of the NFL draft. But I just come back to that receiver room. It's got to look different on paper. And if we get into August and we're looking at Tyquan Thornton, Rashee Rice, and Xavier Worthy as the top three, I think that's going to be a problem for this team. I just do. But Boone, it is never a problem to have you on the show here. Tons of ground covered. Deep dives on some of the worst teams in the NFL, potential doom and gloom on receiver landing spots. We did it all here today, buddy. I appreciate you doing it.
Hey, always fun jumping on with you, dude.
All right, that is going to do it for today's show. On Thursday, we will be back, and Ray Garvin will once again join us for a prospect deep dive, as he's going to do every Thursday leading up to the NFL draft. This time, we're going to be focused on the running back position. We've got Jeremiah Love, but who else do we like in this year's class? All that and more coming up on Thursday's show, live right here, 2 p.m. Eastern on YouTube. Until then, we are out.